Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
So, Eric, should we start with Cody?
We always have to be talking about Cody. The whole wrestling universe has to be talking about Cody at all times.
What'd you think? What'd you think of his big promo there?
Well, let me tell you, Wade. Tonight's Dynamite was the Tale of Two Cities Dynamite. It was the best of promos. It was the worst of promos. I know as a McAllister grad with a liberal arts degree, you'd appreciate the literary reference. Moxley was the best promo, and I need to see the eye doctor tomorrow because I kept rolling my eyes and they kind of stuck frozen place during Cody's promo. My God,
just cut a damn wrestling promo and have a ring entrance, have a wrestling match. Everything is so too much with him.
If you don't read, could you imagine if you were a casual fan who just tuned into Dynamite? I don't know how many of those there are, but and you don't read wrestling websites, you for to review shows, you to, and keep up on the news. You don't. You're not on Twitter, and you tuned in for Cody's promo, and you're like, "What the hell is he talking about? I have no idea. I don't understand any of this." Now, AEW caters to the hardcore fans, and maybe that's who's watching. But I can't imagine if you were just happened to be watching Dynamite as a casual viewer that you understood a word Cody said.
Why does he do this? Like, why can't he just, like, be a wrestler and cut a straight wrestling promo? I mean, his delivery, his intensity, there's a charisma, there's a star power, there's things for him to talk about. But, like, it's so meta. Like, I say this a lot. Like, there was a stretch of time where it was like every promo we started off saying, well, we got a pay-per-view coming up, so this is where I'm supposed to plug the pay-per-view in the date and get you to part with your money. And it's like, stop it. Just be a wrestler in the moment within the four walls and like everybody else. And then, like, you know, I mean, I guess he's laying the groundwork for a Punk match. I don't know truly what's going on with his contract, but maybe this is like his live televised leverage play to get the contract he wants, assuming it's not pure storyline BS for his reality show. And I mean, like it's like there's some movies that you watch and they're like, you know, 2 hours, 20 minutes. And you're like, this would have been a really good hour, 45 minute movie. And you just had to cut some stuff out and tweak a couple things. And I felt that way about the promo, cause there was a lot good in that promo too, that showed if he could just be kind of reined in and, you know, edited a bit and focused. There's times, Eric, as an editor, I've gotten editorials and there've been columnists over the years where I'd get their piece and it would read like his promo. It's like, okay, now let's go to work on this. There's some work to do here. What did you like about it?
I liked the intensity. Yeah. I guess I begrudgingly admired that he spent his music just blared. So you couldn't hear if there were boos, you couldn't hear him right for like 4 minutes. It took him to, when he got to the ring, I timed it between when he got to the ring and when he set up the ladder. And then he started doing a recap of everything I missed in 2 weeks, which was kind of weird. I don't know that that was the mission of the promo. He was glomming on to CM Punk in one of the most popular promos of all time, right? The historically notable CM Punk pipe bomb promo. And then to bathe himself in glory about it. Well, it's really me. I'm the one who achieved all those things. And
he got some cheers when he pointed that out, by the way.
Yeah, you know who did that? His father. His father, I'm old enough to remember his father just glomming on to anybody who had positive heat and to try and get himself over and keep himself over and keep himself the focus. I don't even know that that was his intent, but that's how it came across. And then he kept the fans at bay. It seemed, I have a grudging admiration that he kept the fans at bay by just yelling at them. I saw Trevor Dame on Twitter said, noted wiseacre Trevor Dame said, yeah, he's doing the abusive father thing. You can get everyone to shut up if you just yell at them.
I think I've Twitter, but go ahead.
Yeah, I just
that might be wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I like the intensity. I like the fact that he set up a ladder match versus Sammy Guevara, although I don't think on next week's Dynamite we need two gimmick matches. We got a lights out, no DQ match, and we got a ladder match. It's pick the one gimmick match per show, not two. Spread them out, I think. But what did you like about the Cody promo?
Well, I talked about it. I thought the intensity, the charisma, and I thought edited down, it could have worked if there was a purpose to it. You mentioned college, so we'll go there. If you were studying wrestling promos and you had to write a paper, a summary, a book report, so to speak, a promo report on that promo, what would you come away with as you're a newspaper reporter. You'll always be. And you hear that speech given by a politician. What's your lead? What was the purpose of it? What would have been accomplished if he said mission accomplished afterwards?
I mean, how my lead would have read for that story, it would end with, comma, in a rambling promo that took 10 minutes and exposed, you know, the front half of that sentence is Cody Rhodes' ego and manicness, mania was on full display on Dynamite Wednesday night in a long rambling promo that in which he tried to suck off the heat of others, but ultimately, I guess, got there in the end to set up a match. I don't know. I think exhaustion would be my reaction at this point. I like Cody. I don't think Cody deserves to be booed, but just come on. At a certain point, it's just eye rolling.
Yeah, we've got an email from JB in Detroit, and he lists all the things that Cody talked about, all the insider meta stuff. But his subject line is WTF was Cody's promo. So, yeah, that was something. We'll talk more about that as the show progresses. We have the return of Jon Moxley to talk about. He kicked off the show. Yes, the tale of two promos was this episode. And then the Acclaimed in a main event against Darby and Sting. I thought Darby's head got decapitated when he took that bump off the edge of the ring apron with the chair wrapped around his neck. But as usual, he's fine. Then we got some matches set up for next week's a beach theme show, which will consist of a long lawn chair and probably not much else on the stage, and some things for Rampage. So a lot to get into. More push for Lance Archer as an opponent for Hangman Page, and we'll talk about how Hangman is doing as champ in this Archer feud, and much more. So we'll get to all that, phone calls, and an on-site correspondent who, by the way, is coming up next. Let's first just set the table and introduce ourselves here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, January 19th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. And I am joined today by Eric Kroll, a former Pro Wrestling Torch Newsletter columnist circa 1990. And that's like 32 years ago. That's crazy. And he has also contributed some recent pieces, mostly focused on AEW. I'm doing your bio again here. He took many years off to raise his family from watching wrestling. New Japan pulled him back in. AEW has him full-on addicted again. And he is a long-time professional journalist in the Chicago market, and he is a frequent co-host on this show. Eric, welcome back.
Thanks, Wade.
Did I see your name? Eric Kroll, welcome back.
You did. Thank you. Wade, I would just note, thank you for the bio intro. You're just as old, you know, that makes you just as old as I am. So.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not. Yeah. We're the same age. I'm not categorizing it as old or anything like that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that was a long time ago. We've been doing this a long time.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago. You were doing it. Yeah.
You especially. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, let's talk to our callers. So if you're hearing us right now in the live stream, give us a call. And we'd love to talk to you about what you thought of the show, the Moxie promo, and anything else. Cody promo, if you disagree with us, please call. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard so we know you want to be brought onto the show. And you can also email us if that works better for you, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. And as I said, we have an on-site correspondent coming up. If you're attending a future event and can be an on-site correspondent, drop me a line at that email address, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. This applies to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Those are the three shows during the week where we host a live post-show 5 or so minutes after the shows end, and we like to have on-site correspondents to tell us what it was like in the building. And so we're going to get to Neil, our on-site correspondent, right about now. Neil, welcome to the show. Good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us today.
Hello. Good to be on here. Can you hear me okay? I'm driving home from the show.
Yes, yes. Do you feel comfortable talking with us while you're driving?
Oh, yeah. Hands-free, so
okay.
Safety first.
Great.
I'll just
yep.
pretend you guys are sitting here in the car with me.
Yes, there we go. Very good. Neil, good to talk to you. What's your top takeaway from tonight's show? We'll get into some specifics, but what are you going to remember 2 years from now when you think back to this show as kind of the main thing?
I'll start with the Cody promo because you guys started with it, and it was really interesting to be there for it live. And I would say, like, early on in the show, the crowd seemed kind of timid. Like everybody just seemed to be kind of waiting for their cues. It's like, oh, what chant should I be doing? And it just felt kind of dead. Like, people didn't – it didn't feel like there were a lot of honest reactions to what was happening in the show. And when it got to the Cody promo, as his music starts playing, like, the boos start. And my girlfriend's a Cody fan. She was at home watching on TV, and she was like, cheer for Cody. Everybody's booing him. And then they apparently cut to picture-in-picture. She's like, oh, God, it must be bad. They cut to commercial. So she was dreading the crowd hating against Cody. And there were definitely a lot of people booing, but, like, in the area that I was in, I was, like, opposite the hard camera. And there were a lot of people singing along to his song. So I was like, okay, this is a little more split than I expected. And then he began the sort of meandering promo, as you guys mentioned. And what was really interesting was, like, a lot of the people who were booing him, there was, like, this visceral, like, anger to it. It was really kind of strange. And there was a guy really near me who had been really loudly yelling. And as Cody starts kind of, like, running off his resume and, like, that was me or whatever he was saying, this guy was like, you know, he's got a point. And I was like, okay, I wasn't expecting that. Like, I thought that Cody was trying to come off as, like, super cocky, but it was, like, winning over the crowd in my area. And I don't know how it came off on TV, but by the end of his promo, like, he had the whole crowd in my area, like, on his side. And one of the things that was really interesting about it was that seemed like sort of this, like, first honest expression from the crowd, because they switched. They went against the grain of kind of like what the cool chant was. And I don't know if it came across on TV, but over on the hard camera side, early in his promo, a group of people started chanting Royal Rumble. And the crowd turned on them. And it felt like, I don't want to read too much into the moment, but it kind of felt like, by turning on the people chanting Royal Rumble, there was sort of this, like, rallying around of, like, oh, yeah, we give this guy a hard time, but this is, like, our guy. And I would be fascinated to see an alternate reality version of this Cody promo where that Royal Rumble chant never happened.
A hard time, but.
And so you didn't have the crowd rallying against the Royal Rumble chant and kind of then getting Cody's back. It was a really interesting kind of pivotal moment that it just kind of changed the tone of the crowd.
That's interesting. Eric, did you pick up on the Royal Rumble chant while watching on TV?
I picked up on a chant, and it sounded like they were saying Royal Rumble, but I couldn't hear it. I couldn't completely make it out. Yeah. It didn't last long.
And the point that I thought he kind of went over the crowd is if I remember right here, and there was a lot to it, was when he kind of just said, you know, I hit the check boxes. I did what Punk's dream was when he did the pipe bomb promo. I'm the one who, you know, carved out my path and fought for New Japan and Ring of Honor and teamed with the Young Bucks. And I thought that the intensity and also it served as, and I guess if there was a purpose to this Cody promo, because I think he's on a perpetual ongoing mission to win the fans back and to correct what went wrong. The fans broke up with him, and he's sending love letters and flowers and leaving long voice messages and sending long emails and sending old photos of good times they had together, trying to win them back. And I think it can work temporarily with the hardcore 4,000 people. I still am skeptical that it's going to last, but I'm not sure it won't because, as Cody said, damn it, you guys cheered me at the beginning, and now you're not. And I think he's just spending – I don't know if he's spending every waking hour or half his waking hours, but I get the sense he's spending a lot of time, Neil, trying to figure out what went wrong and how to get them back. And he's strong-arming fans, but he has a case to make. But as he makes it, he also is sort of proving the original point of them booing him in certain ways. So, yeah, your take on anything I just said or anything else there.
Yeah, I mean, if this ends up working, I would have to guess it'd be one of the first times that a talent, like, logically talked a fan base back into liking them. But that was, like, kind of like the most surreal part of it, where it's like, it was like as if he were like scoring debate points, and people were nodding along in agreement. Mm. But for me, I always enjoyed Cody. Well, I shouldn't say always. In the early days of AEW, I enjoyed him. He lost me in the Agogo feud with that weird like America promo and stuff. But I don't know. I find his quirkiness endearing. I agree with you both that I wish he would just kind of, I don't know, try a normal thing, but I don't know. I was very intrigued by how much movement there was in the crowd sentiment during what otherwise would not expect it to be a crowd pleasing promo.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what else? Stood out tonight?
On TV, did it come off? Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, Wade, but like on TV, did it come off as if he went over the crowd, or were the boos still really loud by the end of it?
I thought he went over a vocal part of the crowd. I didn't know if it was the whole crowd, but there was definitely, at least like you say, a section of the crowd that was like, all right, you've tried really hard, you're making some good points, and you've reminded us why we liked you, and there's some intensity here. And passion that we feel about the AEW brand. And so I was kind of thinking, okay, you know, that registered in that moment. But I didn't sense it was like the entire crowd. I think it was like the, you know, a loud section. I don't know if the people, all the people who were booing him were just sort of like, you know, all right, we made our point and letting some people who were cheering cheer him. I couldn't assess it. What was your take, Eric, on the ebb and flow at the end as it concluded?
I mean, Neil, I have a question about the building. Was it really small?
Yeah,
the 4,000 capacity half building, half kind of, theater in the round type. Well, not theater in the round, the opposite of that, a stage on one side and a C-shape of chairs around it.
Okay, because you could hear, like, several times during the show, and including during the Cody interview, like, one individual guy with a really loud voice could make himself heard on national television. Like, during the Cody thing, there was just one guy saying, "Shut up already!" It was like... That doesn't normally happen. So I thought the building was to blame for that, or they AEW finally liked the crowd well for the first time.
Yeah, Neil, talk about that.
No, it's
funny,
especially compared to the first Dynamite that was at Capital One. This was much smaller.
Huh. Yeah, but was it fun to be in a building that size? I mean, I think 4,000 is like a perfect size building to be at a wrestling show for. You know, I mean, sitting upper deck in a cavernous building, especially if it's not full, isn't the same experience as just, you know, this is a, you know, bigger than ECW usually drew, But passion, I assume there was a lot of energy and passion in that building.
Yeah, yeah. It was great. Like, I bought my ticket this afternoon and was able to still, like, have a great angle from my seat. So it was I liked the vibe there. Like, everybody kind of felt close without feeling like it was too close for comfort. But yeah, there was it was an interesting layout. It almost reminded me of, like, the way that that, like, a soccer stadium's laid out, where everybody has a good view even though you're not, like, right on top of each other. So it was mm-hmm. While I was, like, personally a little sad for AEW that they couldn't sell out a 4,000 seat arena with all that was announced for tonight's show, it was a fun setting for them.
And, you know, I'm not sure how much the vaccine mandate might have hurt lockup, because they only had about 90 tickets left among those that were available, according to WrestleTix, as of a couple days ago. And then they put some extra sections that were blocked off for reasons on sale just to try to sell. But I need to ask, how many empty seats were there? Because the late word that you need to have proof of vaccine and wear a mask might have turned some people away. We had an on-site correspondent, Neil, set up for tonight, and he just decided not to go because of COVID. He's got kids who are in school, and he didn't want to put them at risk. So I'm wondering if that didn't play into the lack of just a turnaway crowd.
Well, and it, you know, I made the no sellout comment just based on the fact that I was able to buy my ticket, you know, from, like, not off the secondhand market this afternoon. But there,
sure.
It was not obvious. It was not obvious that the place wasn't full. I mean, like, I just happened to have an empty seat next to me, but. And you could see, like, a few spots here and there, but it wasn't as if the crowd was really, like, wiped out by, you know, any of the health mandates or anything like that.
Sure, yeah. Talk about the Moxley promo and the mood in the building and, you know, how much that – what if you kept an eye on it, what happened to that fan who shouted at Moxley as he began his long-awaited promo and Moxley F-bombed him?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you guys that, if that made it onto TV, because, like, to Eric's point, like, one individual could definitely be heard in the whole area. I couldn't make out what he said. Like, was it clear what he said on TV?
It was not.
Oh, I thought he had – I assumed he just had a sign, like that Nyla Rose sign of him a few weeks ago. No, it was just a guy shouting?
Yeah. As Moxley started talking, he got, like, three words out, and then some fan, because the whole building, Neil, went silent for Moxley, and that was a perfect setting for the fan then to yell some derogatory comment at Moxley.
Yeah, and so that moment, it was like Moxley, like, stopped and paid attention to him, too, but the people in my area, we were all watching, and we didn't see anybody get escorted out, so just not really clear what happened there. We had a pretty good line of sight to the area that Moxley was focusing his attention, but couldn't see anybody getting escorted out, so I'm not really sure what happened there. But I mean, yeah, I don't know, like, when I mentioned earlier how the crowd seemed kind of timid or, like, waiting for its cues, the Moxley reaction was definitely big, but it's like when he wrapped up his promo, like, it almost kind of felt like a polite response, and maybe that's still people kind of trying to feel out, like, what's the right tone with Moxley, because, you know, like, everybody wants to, like, respect what he went through, and so, you know, it's not the same, like, rowdy, you know, dump a beer on the guy as he's walking to the ring. And so, you know, maybe it'll take a little bit for people to kind of figure out what the right tone is to strike. But yeah, like, those early segments in the show, it was just, like, people cheered or chanted when they got the cue to do so, and then it was just dead silent otherwise. But, I mean, you can understand the silence for the Moxley promo. Everybody wants to hear what the guy has to say in his first night back.
Neil, go ahead, Eric. Yeah,
on Twitter, it looks like the fan might have called him a drunken piece of.
Yeah, F-word. I saw that too. Yeah.
Oh wow, that's not cool.
No, not at all.
Or asked him if he wanted a drink. That's another thing people are saying. I don't know.
Oh. Yeah,
Eric, do you want to ask?
I mean, honestly, like. Oh, sorry. Wait.
That's okay. There's just a little delay. Go ahead, Neil.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, like, part of why I waited the last minute to buy my ticket is I'd gotten to a point where I was like, you know, I think I might just, like, rather watch on TV because I feel like, you know, wrestling crowds have gotten to where they just, like, wait for the right chant to adopt. I'm being a curmudgeon here a bit, but it's like you know, we got a "This is awesome" chant like 5 minutes into an Orange Cassidy match, and I'm like, oh god, like this is gonna be a long night. But there's always like those people who want to like yell something to get themselves over. But so I feel like I am getting too old for wrestling crowds in some ways. But the announcement of Moxley's return and the Cody promo and the chance to see I went to a bunch of – I shouldn't say a bunch, but every WCW show I ever went to, Sting did not wrestle. So, like, okay, I'll finally get to see him wrestle in the 60s. And then Todd Martin also convinced me that the Briscoes were going to appear tonight when I caught up on the fix.
Yeah.
So I decided to endure the crowd. And I'd say overall, other than, like, the little things that –
did you learn a lesson about – Neil, did you learn a lesson about Todd there?
I'll put it on the list of lessons I've learned.
There we go. Yeah. All right, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. But I was just going to kind of, like, put a bow on it that that overall, like, even with my curmudgeonly sensitivities, I thought it was a really positive crowd. Only got the one "This is awesome" and the one, you know, sort of bookended in the final match with the "You Deserve It" with Sting, and I was like, okay, I can handle this. Although, I guess, one exception to that, I did laugh at some of the mischief in the crowd. The crowd did not like the Lance Archer and the Frankie Kazarian match. They were really turning on that. And I got a kick out of a dueling chant between Fight Forever and "This is awesome" during that match that was entirely sarcastic, but I appreciated the creativity there. That was like the only time I enjoyed that Fight Forever, "This is awesome" chant.
That's funny. They cut to a split-screen break during that match, so it felt like it was, you know, a bit elongated, perhaps out of respect to Kaz, since he was, you know, going to get decimated and lose. Well, we'll let you last a while, but it just was an extended beatdown. Why did the crowd turn on it? Was it because it was boring, or they just aren't into Archer, they aren't into Kaz, or something else? Like, what was going on?
I think it was the boring thing. There were a lot of people shouting out about it being boring and just, like, go to the finish already, and, you know, like...
Yeah.
You get enough vocal people pushing the same narrative, and it can get contagious pretty quickly.
Bridge silences, or the cellular silences. Are you there, Neil?
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's while well, your cell cuts out, but yep, now we can. Eric, do you have anything you want to ask Neil?
Neil, how was the heat in the main event? It felt like until Darby returned when it sounded quiet to me during a lot of the main event after Darby disappeared to the back for a few minutes. Was it quiet? Was the crowd kind of burned out by then, or did it just not come across that there was heat?
Yeah, that's interesting that it came across that way, because I would say overall, you know, recognizing that your perception of the crowd can be distorted by the fact that you're surrounded by, you know, only part of the crowd, and that can really affect your perception of the rest of the crowd. The area that I was in was really receptive to that, and I was actually surprised. Like, I thought in my area the Acclaimed got one of the biggest pops of the night, and they were definitely getting heel heat during the match. But if anything, I almost wonder if it came off quieter during the sort of like Sting 2-on-1 segment, because like everybody around me was just like, oh my god, like Sting can go, like he's in his 60s, like. It's amazing. And so, like, it was almost like there was, like, this sort of stunned silence, or just, like, the people were speaking to each other about their appreciation for it and maybe not necessarily cheering. But I would say as far as, like, the energy goes, it definitely didn't feel like the crowd was burning out at that point. And, you know, the Darby moment definitely got a pop, but I felt like everybody was still definitely in it.
It's interesting. I wonder if Sting, if he had worked the WWE house show schedule, the grueling, you know, 250 dates a year instead of the, you know, WCW 40 to 60 dates a year schedule in his, you know, most of his prime years. Actually, sat in the rafters for most of the Monday Night War. If he'd have physically be able to do this, like he worked, he got really nice contracts with long stretches of not working a regular schedule. And I wonder if that just, like a lot of wrestlers, the bump card, you know, catches up to them in their 40s. And with Sting, his bump card still got a lot left on it. And, you know, he also has, you know, become kind of the master of the walk-in brawl during some parts of his career too. But, you know, he was winded, but he still took that running dive and almost bent, you know, poor Anthony Bones in half with that table splash. So, I mean, I'm in awe of what he's doing now. But I don't know that he'd be able to do it if he worked the schedule that a lot of WWE guys did, the Shawn Michaels types. And, you know, it's a surprise that they're letting him do this much, but that has to be because he and they are confident he can at this point.
Yeah, and he did seem a little more winded tonight than I've noticed him seeming in recent matches. Wasn't sure how much of that was legit, how much he was just trying to sell the two-on-one stuff, but I did notice that.
I wonder if
he may be mortal.
I wonder if it's harder to wrestle as opposed to leaning on the top rope waiting for a hot tag for most of the match. Like, that probably has something to do with it. You know, usually they play to him storyline-wise to get that big crowd pop when he gets tagged in, but Darby was the one who got hurt and was selling, so or was hurt. And Sting had to work a little bit more in the match. So tell me what surprised you about the crowd reaction tonight, Neil. Like, was there anything that you haven't brought up where you're like, oh, wow, I didn't think that person would get that response, good or bad?
Not much. I would say overall there was nothing too surprising about the crowd. The only thing I can think of that might really fit that would be Serena Deeb got kind of a big pop. And
she's from the D.C. area, by the way.
Oh, I did. Oh, you know what? They did mention that she was out of Virginia. But I was along those lines. I was kind of surprised we didn't get a Nyla Rose appearance. But I feel like, you know, like Serena Deeb's just kind of been, as nasty as she's been, she's also been positioned as just kind of a badass. So it wouldn't surprise me if she does kind of just get some more appreciation pops even outside of the home turf.
Who came across as the biggest stars of the night?
Sting, Moxley, people were really excited for the Hangman run-in, and there's always the sing-along with the Adam Cole entrance. Trying to think if there was anybody. I didn't take notes, so I'm going off memory.
Did you get the Punk pop, the CM Punk pop when he came out?
Oh, I forgot about CM Punk.
Yeah, I'm
embarrassed that I forgot about the whole CM Punk thing. The CM Punk pop was huge.
Go ahead and answer the Sting
and,
pop.
Yeah,
Neil, go ahead. Neil, go ahead and start answering the Punk answer, because we lost your reception for about 10 seconds.
Oh, shoot. Sorry, guys. I'm actually stationary right now. So.
That's okay.
The CM Punk pop was huge. That whole segment was big. You know, between like the heat of the Spears entrance and then the CM Punk entrance, then the sort of surprising finish of the match, I did not get the vibe from anyone that they felt cheated out of a quality CM Punk Shawn Spears match. It kind of added to like sort of the fun party atmosphere of getting under MJF's skin. That whole segment was really hot.
Eric, anything else you want to ask him?
No, not on my end.
Neil, anything else you want to bring up? Did you notice merchandise or something off camera that we might not have noticed, or anything else you want to share from being there?
Nah, I mean, I lucked out and happened to come in the entrance right next to the ramp where I was sitting. So I was just like, you know what, I'm going to take this as a blessing and not wander around at all. The only other little thing of note was that Dan Lambert was walking around in like the concourse seeming lost. And people would say, Dan Lambert, and point at him. And then he would look at them really confused. And I don't know what was going on there, but that was amusing.
So, that is great. What a mental picture. I love it.
Yeah. So.
Cool.
Thanks for letting me go on first during my drive back home. And have a great night, guys.
Great. Thanks. Great talking to you, Neil.
See you, Neil.
All right. So we'll move on to calls here. We got a bunch of people lined up. We'll begin here and with air code 718. 718, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Wade. This is Michael from Queens.
Hey, Michael. Good to hear from you. Yeah, what did you think of Dynamite tonight?
I thought it was a really fun show. It was great to see Mox back. And he looks great and looks like he hasn't really lost a step. That was one of the best promos I think he's had, like, in AEW.
He looks like thinner, healthier, younger. He had the water bottle that he threw at the fans, but he looked like refreshed. And I thought the point of the promo was, don't worry, I haven't changed, even though I'm going to be vulnerable in a Moxley type way here for a couple minutes with you. And it seemed to, just kind of let people know, don't worry, I'm the same guy you always knew, but I want to, tell you it's okay that you got some scars that you got to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. The one thing that has been sticking out with me I enjoy JR. I grew up listening to JR, and when he was first announced as for commentary for AEW, I was a little not happy about it because I heard him in New Japan. I kind of thought he had lost a step, and he's been fine. I think he's found his groove, but there's like certain things that he does. I don't mind him really complaining about the rules, but he's done it a few times where when he did it in the Kaz match tonight, when a wrestler hits the corner with his sternum and he goes, oh, that's shades of Bret Hart. And I just don't understand why as a commentator, you would call out like someone's cell, like Kazarian meant to do that. And I think like that is just a strange thing that enrages me. and I don't really know if like, I'm just being nitpicky, but it really grinds my gears in a way that not many things found JR's commentary.
Erica, throw to you. I don't know if you picked up on that, if you did comment on it, but just Jim Ross in general lately, is he an asset to the show? What percent is good versus bad for you?
My JR moment of the night, JR complaint of the night was JR said this was during, I think it was after the Billy Gunn and Christian Cage angle. JR doesn't understand why anyone can book a title match. He doesn't understand how that happens. Well, JR, it's because there's no on-screen authority figure. And so at best, you get Tony Schiavone saying, Tony Khan has just booked this match for whatever the show's going to be. He knows exactly why anyone can book a title match because there's no one else to do it and complaining about it. It's like, come on, man. He sounded a little hoarse tonight.
He's still
recovering from those marathon treatment sessions. So I guess I'm willing to give JR a little bit more slack in the coming weeks ahead.
Michael, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah. And not to just harp on JR, but he also at one point he said, when Griff Garrison was thrown into the stairs, he said, oh, those stairs don't sell. And, it's just, that is a terminology I don't think should ever be said by a commentator. I know a lot of people get upset about pulling the curtain back in this. Yeah.
Michael, our switchboard missed what you said after Garrison got sent into the stairs. So just kind of pick up there.
Yeah, when Griff Garrison hit the stairs, JR said something like, oh, those stairs, they don't sell, the hit. And I was just like, why as a commentator would you ever say that word?
I didn't understand what he meant.
I mean, guessing like a sell, they wouldn't take the bump correctly.
I understand the rough connotation of it. Okay.
I mean, I don't get the cleverness of it. I think he's just saying when you run into the stairs, they don't fall over and get hurt mm-hmm. because you bumped into them. They just hold their ground.
Yeah.
Throwing inside.
I understand that.
Yeah. I'm with Michael. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I thought that was, I don't know if he was trying to be, cute or whatever. It was just, it was a strange thing for a commentator who should just know better, I felt,
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't want to watch a movie and have actors referencing, oh, this is the third take, and I think it's our best. You know, I just don't take me out of the mode. So,
Wade, did you like Ferris Bueller's Day Off when he talked to the camera the whole time?
I did. Yeah, yeah. That made sense. That worked. I liked when not Mr. Furley on Three's Company. Who was the other? The
Mr. Roper?
Roper, yeah. You know, when he looked at I didn't like it as a kid. I was like, why is he looking at the camera? That's dumb. But now I appreciate it. In a way, it's an exception that proves a rule, whatever that phrase really means. You can make it work if it makes sense. You're trying to bring the audience in and share a moment. But that's, when wrestlers and commentators do it, it's usually to try to score points with the internet crowd. And it's just dated. You know, there was a time when it was like, in the 90s, it's like, oh, my God, that wrestler's referencing us, or, the fans in the know, the smart fans, and, oh, now I can't wait to buy a ticket and cheer him or thank him. And it's like now it's just trite and cliche and tired and counterproductive and it just doesn't serve a purpose. But that comment by Ross, by the way, Stairs Don't Sell, isn't to me that big of a deal, but it's more my broad issue with the motivation of people breaking the fourth wall, including, Cody earlier. Anyway, Michael, back to you for anything else.
Another thing was I thought that Brody and Malakai's entrance was awesome. Sometimes AEW is not really polished in their presentation of things, and I thought, you could definitely tell that they worked that one out, and I thought it really paid off. I thought they looked like monsters.
What do you think, Eric, so far, the presentation of Brody and Malakai?
I agree with Michael on the presentation. My guess would be that's totally Malakai Black. He seems like he's talked about and seems like a guy who takes great pride in his craft and how he's presented. And I'm imagining he has the freedom in AEW to make that happen. I've liked it so far. Brody King is just an odd looking individual. He's huge, but he's not like muscular. He's bulky,
right.
And he's just – I'm not a tattoo guy, and so I'm distracted by all of the tattoos all over his body. And it takes me a little while to get used to him. I think he's a phenomenal talent, and I'm glad they signed him. And I think Lucha Express's tag title reign might be a short one because I think Black and Brody King are coming for him.
Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually have just a little bit less tattoos than Brody has, so it's just something that I just go, oh, that's a tattoo guy, it's something that I barely even see,
Awesome. But, anything else you want to bring up from the show?
No, the only other thing really was Butcher, his band broke up this week. Every Time I Die. I was glad to see him on the show tonight. They kind of went – they broke up in, a awful TMZ way. It's kind of everything aired out in dirty laundry in the public. And I feel bad for the guy. He came out looking good. It wasn't his fault. But, it was just kind of a terrible situation. And my only hope is that maybe he'll just be on Dynamite and Rampage more after this, because I think I've loved his band for maybe – 20 years at this point, and I've been a fan of his musically, and I just hope that he is on TV more, because I've enjoyed what he does artistically, either wrestling or playing guitar.
And what's the name of his band for people who want to, if they haven't listened, take your endorsement and check it out?
They're called Every Time I Die. They're a pretty heavy, hard rock metal band. They just had a new album that came out 3 months ago called Radical, which is, one of their best works. And now it's kind of all going down in flames, unfortunately. But, I love Butcher, love what they do. And, that's all I could really say about tonight.
Cool. Thanks, Michael. Glad you called.
Yeah, appreciate it, Wade.
Yep, call again. So I would say that Butcher's band, Eric, would be on the opposite side of the wheel of Belle and Sebastian.
Yeah, sounds like it from what he said. They're not twee. Yeah.
I was thinking of them because you sent me the mixtape, and there's a lot of Belle and Sebastian back circa 94 or whatever that was. I don't know. When were they?
I feel maybe, like, yeah, maybe mid-90s
yeah,
it started.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, they're good. You can tell what type of person you are with music between those two choices.
Yes.
All right, or what mood you're in, at least. All right, we'll move on here to we'll go to Alex in Montreal. Alex, good to hear from you. What'd you think of Dynamite tonight? What stood up?
Hey, Wade, thanks for taking my call. I really enjoyed the show. I thought it was a bit of a, I would call it like a dizzying whirlwind of a show that kind of still managed to allow kind of like its most important segments to breathe while giving at least one of them a bit too much oxygen in the Lance Archer and Kazarian match, which, you know, sometimes even though a match is, you know, when you look at it on the clock, it's only like 5 minutes or 6 minutes, which I'm assuming that's what that match was. But it can still
the match
feel
was
like
10
dragging
minutes.
On for
yeah.
like it was 10. Oh my God! Okay.
Yeah.
So it was wow. actually as long as it felt. It felt like it was a bit longer even sometimes. But yeah, that one. I mean, I get it because you know Kaz is a veteran, and you want to you know give Archer a TV match. Before he takes on Hangman, because he's been out for a while with recovering from injury. But I thought, you know, they could have cut 3 minutes from there. You can still make Kaz look good, you know, in like 7 minutes or so. I will say what I appreciate about that segment in the post-match is that Hangman just came up to him directly and really just made himself look strong. And I don't think Archer lost much either by, you know, getting clotheslined over the top rope onto the outside because he just had a 10-minute match. I can't believe it was 10 minutes, really. Okay. And he had survived against a veteran and all that. So I was worried before that match happened that, you know, all we were going to hear from Hangman was that kind of quick pre-tape where, you know, you had Jake talking for Lance and talking about Cowboy Bob Orton and all that. And Hangman was talking about him in the pre-match, in the pre-tape too. And I thought, oh no, Hangman feels like just another player, just another character on this ensemble show. But that kind of changed for me when he came out with the belt and got into Archer's face, and you could hear the crowd behind him. So I was just really happy to hear that reaction for Hangman, because I think up until now, since winning the belt from Kenny, I really, really loved the build that they gave to him and Bryan Danielson. I think the 60-minute draw is like one of the greatest matches in AEW's history until now. I think it's my favorite match from last year from promotion for sure. And their part two match was great. So I think they're booking Hangman like really strong so far. And I really enjoyed what he did today to step up to Lance Archer. And I think Archer is like a good second opponent for him to kind of just quickly get out of the way before he moves on to the next big thing as he preps for Revolution. So, yeah, what did you think of Archer's performance, the formatting of the show? Did they give Kazarian too much, and how Hangman came off and how he is coming off as champion so far?
I'll start with Hangman, Eric. Is you were a huge proponent of him, late this past summer, and then it got delayed. You were there for the title win in the building. How do you grade, I think I asked you this last time around, but how do you grade where they are now with him, including tonight, in terms of, does he come across as having the gravitas of a centerpiece babyface world champion, or is there just tough competition for star power and babyface appeal, especially when you've got Moxley out there, CM Punk out there, Cody doing his thing, heck, even Sting and Darby in kind of a different category? Does he seem like has enough like gravitational pull as the centerpiece babyface world champion, or is that still a work in progress, or doesn't it matter? He's doing good enough. So yeah, your thoughts on my framing of that?
Well, AEW is an ensemble show, so yeah, the world champion has almost never needed to be the sole focus. I think Paige, as I asked Tony Khan after the Full Gear pay-per-view, aren't you worried? You're booking your new babyface champion against Danielson, was a face at the time, and that he's going to get overshadowed. And gosh darn it, if that's not exactly what happened with Danielson. I mean, Paige gets the rub, right, from Danielson and take going to a draw with him and then beating him and the double juice. So that all elevates him. Paige has a different promo style. He is not, he's not like Cody. He's not like Mox, right? He's not out there spitting fire. And I thought maybe Paige doing the little pre-tapes where they had a shorter burst of intensity from him maybe was better. And what grade would I give? It sounds weird to say after the guy had 90 minutes of very exciting wrestling. But I B plus. I don't know. I'm not going into an A territory. I think he's not going to get over. Paige is not going to get overshadowed by Lance Archer. I thought Lance looked a little slow tonight in his first match back. The match was boring because it was a 10-minute squash, and I think probably several of the minutes were in picture in picture and an ad break, I would think. It's interesting that they. I don't know why Jake is around. I get that he wants to be around wrestling, but man, with his health problems and Omicron surging everywhere, it's not worth it having him out there. And I guess I would say they clearly thought they needed something else to ignite this feud because they put Lambert with Lance Archer and Jake, right? So, and so, you know, Lambert probably adds the little something they need to get this feud over the top. I, too, like Alex, liked that Paige came out and slugged him. Paige needed to come back after Archer did the beatdown last week, right? Or Paige would look like a weenie and unable to hang with Archer. I'm selfishly hoping that we've got six more Dynamites and Rampages, seven more Rampages, before the Revolution pay-per-view on March 6th, I think it is. And so I'm selfishly hoping that they do the build for they have the Archer Hangman match on February 2nd in Chicago. I have a ticket. I'm on the fence about going due to the pandemic, but it would be if they do that match, I think I'm going to put my health concerns on the side and about catching the virus, and I'll probably go attend that. So selfishly, I hope they do that. One thing that I thought Lambert did another one of his he did a post-match promo, and one of his lines was something along the lines of giving hand jobs to heifers to make almond milk for Starbucks baristas. it's not quite vegan beef from FDR last year, but it certainly was a mouthful.
Yeah. Yeah. Lambert's something else. All right. Lance Archer is fine for this. I think that this is the right use of him, which is to defend or to challenge the champion on a TV show, but not a pay-per-view, and then move to kind of, you know, being a monster on the second tier. And they just got to, you know, kind of get his character straight. I mean, Tony Schiavone said, why are you with Dan Lambert? Why are you with Jake and Archer? And he's yanked the mic away and says, you don't need to know. And then he just goes on his normal spiel. So we still don't really know. You know, there's some weird alliances going on. The Andrade Matt Hardy thing was weird. maybe we'll talk about that later. Archer's fine, but not. You don't want to make him a top six guy you're building around. But it's good to have somebody like him around who can be a credible threat, just visually and in terms of kind of intimidation and, you know, his track record. And then ultimately lose to Hangman. I think it's a good notch on Hangman's world title belt. The pace of the show was, you know, frenetic but I didn't think it was all that different than, you know, what most Dynamites are like.
So I counted them up while I was waiting for Wade to start the post show here. There were 13 segments, angles to set up matches or to further feuds. I have a list of them. I wrote it down. But in addition to the six matches, and four of the six matches were squash matches tonight, or, you know, I guess Kazarian Archer was a 10-minute squash, so I think that counts. But only two competitive matches tonight to open and close the show. So I thought that was a change of pace for AEW. Usually they have more wrestling, not less, and tonight there were some squashes.
Alex, back to you.
Yeah, no, just to follow up on, you know, the last point, I really felt the difference on tonight's show as well. And last week especially, like, I feel like Dynamite, how it's been separating itself from WWE, is that it is, you know, supposed to be the more wrestling-heavy show. And typically it is, and I think still is, even on a show like tonight. You know, at least we had the I thought it was bookended by pretty nice matches. Most of the stuff in the middle at least served storyline purposes. The CM Punk thing was a nice surprise. I really enjoyed the viciousness of Serena Deeb. Again, it's just the Archer-Kaz match. That's kind of the one outlier of the thing that I didn't, like, totally enjoy. But it is something that just, you know, even if you don't consciously – even if you're not, like, consciously aware of it, of, like, you know, the show isn't happening the way that, like, you're used to it happening, like, let's say even like 6 months ago or even maybe 3 months ago or something like that, with a more match heavy show, your brain still noticed, okay? Like, something at the back of your brain is still telling you, like, wait a minute, this show feels different, but I can't quite put my finger on it. And then last week, I didn't totally enjoy – I mean, I did enjoy overall the show last week, but the one thing that it was missing was, I'm like, there was no single match that I'm going to be raving about or that I felt was a quote-unquote banger, I guess, that I would say, oh, you've got to watch this match. It's really high-octane, a lot of fun. This week, I thought the opener came the closest. Like, it wasn't like a stereotypical, you know, high octane of balls to the wall match kind of thing. Sorry if that's a term that is unacceptable on your show. But yeah, I thought it was still a very enjoyable, fun, exciting match. And I thought they had the crowd in the palm of their hands by the end. But I feel like with the number of, you know, just talent that are on the shows these days on Rampage and on Dynamite and on the AEW roster page, this is an issue that you're just going to come across, that the matches are going to get have to be squeezed from 11 minutes to, you know, 5 minutes, or you're going to have to introduce more 3-minute matches, and you're going to have to introduce more 45-second setups of, you know, Christian talking to Billy Gunn and then Christian getting run over from behind by the Gunn Club. And this kind of stuff, it's just going to have to happen out of necessity just because of the size of your roster. And on a show like today, I thought it worked. Last week, I didn't think it worked as well. So I think it puts a lot more pressure on those kind of premium position matches that do get more time and that do get more of a focus to deliver. Because if they don't, or if they do for half the audience but not the other half, like, for example, the Wardlow Punk match, you know, was I thought was quite divisive in terms of, like, the fan discourse last week, you're going to get more and more people not totally satisfied or not as consistently satisfied with the show. Like, this week I loved it, but last week I didn't. And the company has kind of earned the benefit of the doubt with me because most of the time I do really enjoy it or enjoy it to some degree, and I'm never really bored. But I see this potentially becoming a problem more and more moving forward if those, you know, big-time matches or the matches that are supposed to be given more time don't deliver on a show. So, sorry, that's a little rambly thing, but yeah, if you can just speak to that, I guess.
So, Eric, I think, you know, they're trying to promote, unlike, you know, a year ago, they're trying to promote next week's Dynamite plus Rampage. And recently they've also been promoting Battle of the Belts, and sometimes they're also promoting a pay-per-view. And so that leads to a density of angles. And I wonder if, you know, this is no longer a show where they point the camera at the ring and tell the wrestlers to wrestle. They're adding a lot more, you know, a lot more segments and density. You know, 15 years ago it might have been called, or 20 years ago, a Crash TV type formula. It has that aspect to it, and there's less breathing space for just long matches. Of course, this is a show before Tony Khan yells at us that did feature a 60-minute match and a 30-minute, you know, 30-plus-minute match recently. So, you know, they have their moments for sure. But how do you feel about if they're striking the right balance? You know, do we really need an angle for every match that they're going to feature on Rampage, like, you know, just wedged into Dynamite? I wonder if everybody's just sort of pitching ideas, and and there's too many people saying, yes, Layla Hirsch, we'll let you do an angle with Red Velvet to justify whatever. But I also don't think it's bad to have, you know, ongoing storylines and making sure you're reminding people of what's happening. So I'm a little torn, but it's gotten to the brink of on the edge of being too much without it being like a headline complaint for me or anything, because I think they're still managing it well. But it is walking that line of being a little too much and too frenetic. Where are you on this, Eric?
One of my biggest frustrations with AEW in the early months was they would just throw matches out there cold. The point the camera at the ring thing you talked about. And I'm like, I like the good wrestling, but there's just no backstory here. So it's somewhat hard to get invested in any of these people. And I do like that they are, I don't think it's very rare where they just throw out a match with no setup. They throw it out cold. Cause Arian Archer really didn't have any build, but you know, that's okay. The quickness of it, right? The doing it in a minute or less, I think that's fine. It's hard to keep track of, you know, the Statlander, Red Velvet, Layla Hirsch thing. Look, you got to give these young wrestlers reps, right? It's been wooden for 2 weeks in a row now, but I'm patient with it because they're never going to learn unless they do it, right? It's unfortunate that they have to go out there on national TV and do this sort of wooden acting, but they'll get better over time, right? Or they won't, and then, you know, then they're not on TV. They don't earn their space. Mm-hmm. But, it's a tough balancing act, and the show's always been manic and fast-paced, but the 13 separate angles and six matches mm-hmm. May have set a record tonight.
Yeah. I mean, I'm happier with a little bit more of a middle zone between the two extremes, but this is more typical of what they have been doing lately. Some of the pandemic era pre-tape shows were, you know, meticulously edited and, yeah. you know, I know Tony Khan told me once, you know, like he watched like back one of his pre-tape shows multiple times, made tons of little tweaks and edits to it before the final version came out. You know, he had a chance to refine it and edit out, you know, the pace and the order and anything he wanted. And that's not realistic from a time standpoint to do every week. And it's impossible logistically when you're doing a live show for TBS almost every week. But during the pandemic era, you could tell the live versus pre-tape shows, it was different. And so the show is evolving and I'm glad, you know, I don't want it to be stagnant. And they are serving more masters now with Rampage as another show they're trying to build angles for so they can hold an audience. But I think it's, again, on the verge of being too much, but not quite there yet. That's kind of my take, Alex. And I hope that the pace gets – I hope that they still do bring showcase matches that go long as part of the Dynamite and Rampage brand regularly, and they don't go to just, you know, with the exception of Archer Kaz going real long, where all the matches are 4 to 6 minutes shorter than you think they should be. I don't want that to be the formula either. Anyway, any quick closing words, Alex? Because we got a lot of other callers on hold.
No, I agree with you in general. I think they're striking a pretty good balance. And the last thing I will say is I'm glad that they are refocusing on the tag division, which I thought they were omitting much to their detriment for several months there. For a while there, I thought it was just like FTR and Lucha Bros were like the only two tag teams still functioning in AEW. But last week and this week, I mean, we're getting refocusing on Santana and Ortiz, the Kings of the Black Throne, the Gun Club, everyone's going out to Jurassic Express, Private Party, the Acclaimed having a match tonight. So I'm really just glad just to see more tag team focus on the show. And, I think the Acclaimed need to become tag champs at some point by the end of this year. And I think I'll leave you with that.
Great. Thanks, Alex. Eric, any thoughts on the tag division?
Yes. The Gun Club likely to be getting a tag title shot here as Jurassic Express is pissed that they attacked their mentor and friend, Christian Cage. Christian Cage had one of the lines of the night when he told Billy Gunn, "You guys, your boys have no statement wins." He's 100% correct. They've won a bunch of squashes on AEW Dark over the last year, and they might be 56-1, whatever it is, but good Lord, they're the number two ranked tag team. It just makes a mockery of the ratings. The Young Bucks aren't in the top five. Red Dragon aren't in the top five, but hey, the Gun Club are number two because that's they want to give Jurassic Express another easy win tag title defense. I've rolled my eyes at that one.
Does Christian come across a little too, I don't know, dickish in the way that he makes even good points? Like, I just, like, he can be saying something I totally agree with, but he just says it, like, with just sort of a little extra something that is just a turnoff. And I don't know, I can't quite put my finger on it, but when he did that there, it's like, oh, go get a statement win. And it was like, you could have said it a little nicer and been more likable. Like, they didn't kick your dog, you know, like, everything he just reacts to, like, they're this awful person who did something terrible to him. And it's like, just make your point, but settle down a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Christian's been that way during his entire AEW tenure.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, he got off on the wrong foot because Tony Khan said he signed the greatest thing since sliced bread, and then it was like, oh, it's Christian. And it was the meme of, Mom, buy Lucky Charms. Mom, we have Lucky Charms at home. And then you cut to the home, and it's like the generic version of Lucky Charms. It doesn't have enough marshmallows in it. And that's not really – it's not Christian's fault he was overhyped. Yeah. I wonder if people have been talking about they're setting up this Christian heel turn and split, and they've been setting it up for forever. I wonder if it's unintentional and Christian just comes across like a dick, so people think that.
Yeah. I think they were planning that with Jungle Boy, and I think it'll still happen. Why else have – you know, who had their money on – Christian replacing Marco Stunt in AEW, but I think that day will come, but they're just playing long ball with it. But yeah, I don't know if he's just got a chip on his shoulder. He's just trying. I don't know. I can't figure it out, but I just tell him to loosen up a little. People will like him better. Anyway, we'll go next here to Chris from Mount Pearl. Chris, welcome. What'd you think of Dynamite tonight?
Gentlemen, from now on, though, I think I'd like you to be called Gunnar McGillibuddy, if that's okay. You know, I just I'm actually going to defend Cody a little bit, and this hurts. Yeah. I don't really want to do this, but the crowd had no idea whether they loved him or hated him. And sure, they might have been doing it ironically. It might have been to make fun of him. But if you are the vaunted possibly fictional casual fan watching that, and you hear the crowd cheering him, then how are you going to know if he's a face or a heel? So he's just – you're adding fuel to his I'm never going to turn fire, because he can go backstage now and go, see, I'm still getting cheered. And the promo, I mean, yeah, I know you hate the pot shots, Wade, and the inside jokes. Some of them were funny. The gory self-mutilation, well, that was later on. But some of it was just amusing. Some of it was ridiculous. Some of it was cryptic. The promo didn't actually do anything. It set up a ladder match that we all saw coming from the picture-in-picture. I don't know. There's rumors that he's the Midnight Rider is going to face Adam Page actually and win the title. I don't know. I don't know how true that is.
Funny.
But what's going on with this? Like, so do we think Sammy wins the ladder match because it seems set up for him? And then what? Like, is the Punk thing a red herring? Is Cody like what is going on?
I don't know, Eric.
When it came out this week, it was portrayed as a big news story, though I don't think it is. But when it came out that somebody put it out there to one of the websites that's more of doesn't ask maybe as many questions, that Cody hadn't resigned, my first thought was it's probably a work. Somebody put it out there for a reason, right?
Yeah.
Could be reality show, could be contract leverage. But then my second thought was maybe the reason Tony Khan all this time has sounded exasperated about Cody when he's asked about it all the time, he can't push Cody to turn heel because he doesn't have leverage because Cody hasn't signed his contract.
Yeah.
And so he's willing to let Cody be Cody until he gets his name on the dotted line, and then maybe he can, you know, stand up to him. I don't know. To your other point, Wade earlier was talking about how Cody is like a you broke up. The crowd is the girlfriend, and Cody, you know, the crowd dumped Cody, the boyfriend, and Cody's been trying to win his ex-girlfriend back. The problem with that is Cody hasn't changed. It's still the same extra BS that, you know, been chronicled on this podcast numerous times. He's still got the suits on. He was wearing a brown suit tonight, which was a fashion sin. It's not 1973. Still the extra entrance music, still got the neck tattoo. You know, I believe if I'm correct, you can get that stuff lasered off these days. There's just been no change. To use Wade's analogy, he's the crappy ex-boyfriend, and he's talking a good game, but he still ultimately hasn't changed. He's still the same guy at his heart. And I think tweak the act, right? It doesn't seem to have occurred to Cody that he needs to tweak his act. Some weeks he'll show up in a UFC outfit or, you know, sweatpants or whatever and athletic wear. And that's a step in the right direction, right? But I just don't think it's enough. What do you guys think? Does Cody need to change fundamentally some of his act to really get over the hump?
Well, yeah, he needs to simplify. I mean, it just – stop trying – you know, I've said this before, and I apologize for saying it again here, but, you know, Diamond Dallas Page, when I interviewed him, he talked about how Eric Bischoff once told him, Dallas, take off all this stuff. Like, you haven't seen an addition to your outfit, your ring gear, your everything that you wear as your gimmick. You haven't said no to anything for like 8 years, and it shows. Like, it's like a house that just needs to be decluttered. And Paige is like, yeah, Eric was right, and I took off everything. And he's like, yes, get rid of that, get rid of that, get rid of that, get rid of the earrings. The earrings, yes, that was two. And then he exploded. He was the babyface WWE needed at that point, and it worked. And I just feel like with Cody, I mean, the neck tattoo is probably not going anywhere, but, you know, the ring entrance and the meta and the fourth wall breaking, just it's not beneath you, Cody, to just cut a straight up wrestling promo, you know, the type that Ricky Starks cut or that Ethan Page cut. Like, just do that. It's okay. You're not that special. Like, you're, in a way, it's the opposite. He's special enough where he doesn't need to do all this other stuff because he's really charismatic, really talented, has star power, has an aura. Just simplify it and let that stuff talk. It's like my journalism professor just said, use one correct word instead of a bad word with a bunch of adjectives. Like, Cody just needs to be who he is and not add all this other stuff to it. And I don't know if it's insecurity or pomposity or what, but that's the change I would have. Just strip it down, simplify it, and it really is. It really would be enough, and I think an improvement. And I think people like Cody. I don't think they like Big Shot Cody, and I think that they think Cody's too layered.
To extend the metaphor, if Cody is the boyfriend trying to get back, well, the crowd is the girlfriend who keeps calling Cody for late night rendezvous when they're bored. I don't think Cody is completely to blame here. Like, if you're going to hate the guy, then boo the guy. But I think with Cody, I think what it is he's just trying really hard to stand out. He's trying to be different, and he thinks that all he can do is he has to think outside the box. The problem with that is if all you ever do is think outside the box, all you've done is made a bigger box. You're not thinking outside it anymore. Your box is
all
encompassing.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So yeah. Like, he's got to figure out what he is and stick to it. Something positive, though, and this is a quick one I want to get your thoughts on. I haven't heard it mentioned yet. Brian Pillman's sell of the, no, I can't do the springboard. When I used to write for a website that I shall not mention by name, but there was a column on that website about 12, 13 years ago called Hidden Highlights, and it used to pick out stuff like this, and I loved it. And to me, that was a hidden highlight. That was perfect selling of what had happened to him in their singles match with the, was it a botch? We don't know. The commentators picked up on it. And I thought that sort of psychological storytelling not only sells Malakai Black as a sort of cerebral assassin, where have I heard that before, but also it really puts some long-term storytelling in place for something that really seems so minor. I don't know if either of you picked up on that, what you thought of it.
It didn't jump out to me. Eric, did it for you?
Yeah, I thought it was in a 2-minute match, it stood out because it was,
yeah,
you know, it was a big part of the storyline, and then it led to Griff Garrison getting thrown into the, as they were arguing, I think then Griff got thrown into the stairs. I think AEW has only done that bit one other time, and it was when Christopher Daniels slipped with trying to do the best moonsault ever or whatever that move was called, and then he lost the confidence in it and went on a losing streak. So, yeah, they don't play that card very often, but it can be effective to Chris's point.
Yeah, I do like when you can notice stuff that's callbacks or selling something or telling a story about, you know, someone having an insecurity or something going on in their head that affects the way they wrestle. And you know, there's a context to the moves, not just trying to pop a crowd and get a high spot in. Go ahead, Chris. Anything else?
Yeah, just a couple of quick things before my final point. I thought it was Max Caster that Sting splashed. It could have been Bowen, so, but his arm looked really nastily bent underneath him. I hope he ends up being okay with that. Why is Frankie Kazarian now? You guessed it, Frankie Kazarian. If I thought Trent with a question mark was ridiculous, then you guessed it, Frankie Kazarian might be worse. And I also think Lance Archer is kind of in the Kane position right now for Adam Page and the big monster who has absolutely no shot but looks like a convincing win. The big thing I want to hit on, though, I really want to draw a parallel on this. Mental health is a big deal to me, and I know you've had a caller in the past who I won't mention by name, but they have spoken about it on air, who had some issues with substance abuse. And Moxley's promo, I mean, I've still got goosebumps from it. But I want to draw the parallel to the way AEW has treated that, the way Punk addressed it, the way that Eddie Kingston was able to write in the Tribune, and contrast that with what WWE did with Jeff Hardy and the Sheamus angle. And if I am a talent, if I am a wrestler, and I look at the way these two companies treat a real-life, very serious situation, I know where I'm going to try and make my living. I want to go to a company that treats me as a human being, foibles and all. I don't want to go to a company who is responsible for putting Dr. Heine on the air for Jim Ross and thinks that substance abuse either gets you a push in the tag team titles and a spot next to the biggest person in the company or is made into an angle and mocked. So I've got my issues with Tony Khan and how he handled the Big Swole situation, but I think what they've done with this is definitely deserving of praise, and this is how companies should be.
Eric, you want to speak to that at all?
Did the announcers or Moxley ever actually say why he's been absent tonight?
I don't think so. Chris, did you hear them mention the specific?
Not this week. I don't remember if Punk explicitly said it in his promo or if he just made like very broad allusions to it, but it's not like it's been hidden.
Right. No, it hasn't been.
That's
Moxley's prerogative. You know, I wrote that in my report at PWTorch.com that, you know, it's up to Moxley how detailed he wants to go. This is very personal, very real life. And I thought the way he talked about it was broad and effective, and those who know. And those who don't can sort of apply what he's saying to themselves if they want.
Yeah, I think I agree. I like the respect that AEW, you know, gives to its wrestlers and treats real world issues as serious things to be taken seriously as opposed to turning it into a poor taste angle like the competition does. If you didn't know why Moxley was gone, if you were a casual fan, I mean, I have to think 99% of the audience, maybe it's 90%, whatever it is, they know, right? They know why Moxley's been gone. But if you didn't know, you certainly didn't know after the promo why Moxley wasn't around, right? They didn't spell it out for you. You would need to take the time to Google where has Moxley been, and then you could find out, right? So it's not like an insurmountable thing. I thought the promo was intense and memorable, and it was part Terry Funk and it was part Steve Austin. And the thing that stood out for me, where I got the goosebumps, was that the crowd was in silence. They were just in awe of this intense thing that was going on. That just made it so great, because when do wrestling fans ever shut up about anything? You know, part of the appeal of going to a live event is to cheer and boo, and that was just real, and he was out there being real. The one quibble I had with it was I wasn't sure where Moxley goes from here, right? In WWE, Moxley would have got out three sentences, and then somebody's music would have hit, and they would have done a run-in or interrupted him or come out, to Chris's point, and made fun of him for his human frailty. But they resolved that by the end of the show by having Ethan Page do a promo saying, you know, he was going to challenge Moxley. So they even resolved the one quibble I had at the time.
Any closing words, Chris?
No, I think I'll leave it there. Thanks again for taking my call, and have a good evening. Stay safe, gentlemen.
Great, Chris. You too. Thanks. All right, we'll go next to Craig from Toledo. Craig, welcome. What say you about Dynamite tonight? Good to hear from you.
Hi, I think I'm the one that the previous caller was talking about with the substance abuse issues and the mental health stuff. Maybe, I don't know. But I absolutely loved, like, I wasn't going to tune in live tonight. I was, you know, more wanting to watch hockey, but when they said Mox was coming back, I was like, okay, I gotta see what's going on here, because he's been my favorite for ever since I started watching again in 2014. And what he did tonight, front to back, and I haven't watched it again. I'm going to watch it after the show's over, after you guys' show's over. But it was powerful, and especially today, like, I'm having a bad – a really freaking bad day, and hearing him say that stuff, it was just like insanely powerful to you know, when he's talking about the scars and all that stuff, and it's like, and when he just started off, like, you know, the go F yourself to that guy, or, you know, I don't think you guys have mentioned that part yet. I haven't really heard many F-bombs on the mic in AEW and what repercussions.
I'd love for there to be a Tony cam, Craig. I wish there was a Tony cam and we could see how he reacted to that. Cause I could have imagined a range of emotions from Tony. You know, you're at first you're just thinking, you know, your sympathy for Mox. You know, the crowd's silent. He's beginning to talk for the first time in months, and this guy just, you know, shouts, you know, heckles him, shouts something at him, and you're like, yeah, you know, kick his ass, you know, drop him off the balcony. And then you're also going, oh crap, I got TV executives, there's standards here. I put a live mic in this wrestler's hand, and I trust him, and he broke that trust. He let his emotions, you know, break a rule that, you know, everybody abides by for a reason. And so, you know, I can imagine Tony as the boss having mixed thoughts on that.
I
think
was,
we got a second F bomb. Archer
yelled
that was
during
some a match. Fan.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
You got to stop.
I heard that too.
You can't be doing that.
It's not as bad as, Nick Gage using a pizza cutter while there's a Domino's ad in the picture-in-picture.
Shelton Benjamin last week or the week before, just said, give me the GD belt, like right next to the camera. And I was like, okay, you know, Vince is not going to like that either. It's just, you know, understand what, you know, the context of the show you're on and that you're on live television and what the, you know, what the rules are and find other language. In Moxley's case, he'll probably be forgiven given the circumstances. And I mean, I, as a viewer, I loved it, you know, but I get if Tony might be like, Mox, don't do that to us. But anyway, go ahead.
But it's 2022. Are there really people who are going to call and bitch about that? A curse word? I mean,
yeah, there are.
In good faith or just WWE drones who are acting in bad faith, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, Craig.
But in all the time I've been watching wrestling, if you could ever do that live, that would be the time. Like,
right.
To forgive somebody live, because that was,
I agree.
You know,
yeah.
Whether he said, because I thought when I heard it, I thought he said, get that drunk bleep out of the ring. And some other, you know, there's other quotes that have been going around, whatever. I don't even care.
I saw enough versions of it to not know what it was. So I just haven't even tried to quote it.
But just to have him even pick himself up after that and deliver that promo, like you guys said,
yes.
It was like a tale of two promos. Well, actually, I did like the Cody promo because I've liked the Cody thing. I don't know. I know you guys are analysts and stuff and are into the next 2 million thing, but
yeah,
I don't care. If it tickles me, it tickles me. And so, and that,
right,
and everything it's the Gunther thing that tickled me, like the little Royal Rumble chant that tickled me. Like, I enjoy that. I don't care if it's bringing more fans in because I'm already a fan. So, and I wasn't going to push one on the keypad, but the guy said,
yeah, I saw after he said it that he pushed one, and I'm like, okay, I got to go to Craig next in case he wants to say, I think he's talking about me.
I'm pretty sure because I'm pretty open about it. And I just totally appreciated that, and I appreciated I appreciate you giving that platform to people like me, too, to talk about stuff like that. And just, you know, it's a thing that needs to be talked about. And honestly, like one of my friends is in rehab right now. And I was talking to my boss today and he was talking about getting me in. And so hearing that like 2 hours after we just had that conversation, it was just like, you know, I'm not going to drink any blood, but you know, it was really powerful. And,
I
just appreciate that being a, something that not just – I'm not a Tony Khan stan or whatever, but, like, if you can keep bringing this stuff up, like, struggles like this, that's a good thing. And I'll let you guys go. Thank you.
Craig, we missed about the last 10 seconds of what you said. You said you're not a Tony fan, but if you can bring up the struggle.
Yeah. If you can bring up that struggle, I'm all into it. And I just said thank you. Taking my call.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. There's a connection issue. Craig, I'm glad that you did call. Sorry, we had a little tech issue there. I appreciate your kind words, and you know, wish you well, and stay in touch. Call again.
And go VIP.
Yes. Thank you. All right, let's see. We'll go next to Jay in Hartford. You're next, and then Deke in Michigan on deck. Jay, thanks for calling. What do you want to talk about Dynamite tonight?
Good evening, Wade. I want to talk about Cody.
sure, yeah, of course.
Didn't like the promo. I tried to like it. I was listening thinking, okay, just go with it. We know the style of promo that he cuts, but – first of all, it was too, and I don't know, wait, if I called last week or the week before, maybe it was 2 weeks ago when I was talking about too many WWE references, and there were just so many in the one promo, and I would just love it so much if they would just focus on themselves, not reference WWE. Like, he mentioned the pipe bomb, and I'm thinking, okay, why is he bringing that up? But he was going somewhere with it in the promo when he basically said, well, everything's, you know, Punk said he was going to do, I ended up doing it. So there was a point to it, but I just didn't get, there was really no need to make the reference to the Walter thing. It made me chuckle, but it was just like, he said my real life friend, Ricky Starks, which that's not a WWE thing. That's just more so like, hey, I'm talking about real life. I'm, like we say, breaking the fourth wall. I just didn't like it. I didn't like anything about the promo. And it seemed pointless. Like, I'm not – it just seemed like go out there, talk for 5 or 10 minutes. And the whole thing with – I've been somewhat intrigued by, you know, what may be a pending heel turn. But some weeks I'm like, is it? Like, is this really Cody just saying I'm not turning and like, begging for cheers? Like, even tonight he says, oh, everything Punk, you know, said he was going to do in the pipe bomb. Well, I actually did it. To me, that came across as heelish. And I'm like, okay, maybe a few would see him. Punk is coming. But then in the same promo, he's like, but cheer me for what I did. I'm like, okay, so which one is it? He's getting now to levels of just, you guys have a large roster. If you keep him on my screen, I wouldn't care because I'm not – he's making me care less. Like, pick a side because I'm less and less, I don't know, entertained, if I'm supposed to be entertained. I didn't care for the promo. And I'll ask you, I don't mean to ramble, but I'll ask you, do you know what he meant? Did anyone understand when he said, if you're a journalist who doesn't agree with me, you're not a journalist? I didn't get that. Something else about, oh, when this person gets here in 8 years, I didn't even want to rewind and figure out who he was talking about. So there were things that I guess you had to really, really be inside to follow. But I
think he was talking about Brody Lee's son in that reference, because I think he's 10. And so he's just like, when he's an adult, he's going to take it up with you, Brody King. As far as the reference to wrestling journalists, certainly my ears perked up when he said that. But like a lot of his promo, it just felt a little obtuse or out of reach in terms of fully getting where he was going. Cause it just, he's darting, you know, like I just imagine in his head, like the balls bouncing around in his head from one thing to another, it just, he's hitting so many bullet points and there's, you know, like you said, Ricky Starks, my real life friend, and I'm going to turn heel. And it just takes me out of the mode that I'm in when I'm watching, you know, Adam Cole and Britt Baker and, you know, doing their shtick. And when I'm watching, you know, I mean, just he just goes outside the bounds. He doesn't need to. It was one of my criticisms of the CM Punk promo that he referenced is it's like if you go outside the bounds of the boundaries of what the rules that everybody else has to follow, the rules of engagement for how you're supposed to get yourself over, you can get over. You know, and obviously Punk, you know, I get that it made sense to do it, and it was a special time. He's the right voice to do it. But I just think it's sort of – it's not cheap heat, but it's a little bit of cheating to get us talking about
absolutely.
Him. And so, like I said in my TV report on the website, I said, I love this promo selfishly because we get to talk about it tonight. This is the type of promo we can talk about on a podcast. But if I'm genuinely, you know, like if I have a financial stake in Cody being valuable to AEW and AEW in general, this is the promo that sort of blows up the narrative structure. And, you know, do you fully recover from it when you start talking in front of a crowd about not turning heel? And Ricky Starks is my real life friend. Like, what? Just stop it. Like, it's still 2005 TNA. You know, like, oh, we're just so, you know, we're just desperate to have a buzz about us. And I don't really respect it. I don't think it's a prudent, keen way to go about trying to get yourself over. And so the journalist thing, Eric, when he said it, did you understand what he was saying? Was it very, very generic?
No, I didn't at first, and then he cleaned it up because it didn't make any sense the first time he said it.
Yeah.
He cleaned it up and he said to say, if you're a journalist who doesn't report, doesn't acknowledge that I did all these things, then you're not a journalist. And then he followed that up with, I built the forbidden door, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It was very specific about, here's the things Punk did, and I did them. And then it was sort of like preemptively, I think in his head, he thought someone was going to go, you're no CM Punk. What's he trying to say? Like, he was almost, and do you think that's what was going on there, Eric, is, oh, I'm going to preemptively let people know. If you think you're going to say, if you're going to fact check me on this, you're wrong.
Yeah, in the mind of Cody is a very jumbled place at this in 2022. I laughed at the I built the forbidden door because probably it was only a limited audience who saw this, but when Tony Khan was in Impact last year, and he was early last year, I think, and he was doing his character.
Yeah.
I mean, Tony was doing a heel promo. And
the Vince in Memphis fantasy.
Yeah, had his sunglasses on, and Tony Khan at one point said, "I am the Forbidden Door." And I just laughed because Tony was clearly doing a bit, a character, tongue-in-cheek. Yeah. And Cody was serious, right? It's like, doesn't even know that he's a parody.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Cody's interesting.
Yeah,
Cody's interesting. I want him to do be on a reality show where it's just filming a real therapy session with him, and just have him explain everything that he does and how he thinks, and Brandy can sit next to him for like half the show. Anyway,
there was something.
Well, go ahead, Eric.
During the I may or may not have been watching. With a VPN on Fight TVs to avoid all the picture-in-picture, may not have, but I think it probably was during the picture-in-picture portion. I have to rewind it because JR called Cody something, and I couldn't make out what he said. I think he called him a hug chaser, and Excalibur sort of chuckled and didn't understand what that meant, and I Googled it, and hug chaser does not seem to be a term, so maybe he said something else. But JR
it should be. I like it.
Yeah, it hug chaser makes sense to me in that Cody literally is chasing is chasing for fans' hugs at the
point. Yeah, yeah. All right, J-Mac.
And
that's funny.
Sure, thank you. So, I the interim champion. I don't get that either, because Cody to me hasn't been gone that long that you would need to crown an interim champion. Like, he's back, and. Yeah. When I think of interim, I think, okay, you're doing this until, like, in a company until the position is filled, right? So if the real champion is back now, the official position holder, you know, then the interim person is no longer interim whatever you were. Like, you go away. So I know it's cliche, but it's better when the guy comes back and says, "Hey, I never lost the title. I'm the real champion," as opposed to calling, saying we have an interim champion, and then now they have to have a ladder match to determine who the official champion is. Well, no, the official champion has been Cody the whole time, because we clearly said this other guy will only be the interim champion. So am I the only one that has a problem with now we got to have a ladder match? Like, you could just as easily have Sammy Guevara ask for a rematch, like, you know, being the former champion.
Yeah.
Make it a ladder match. I don't know, but it doesn't make sense.
Well, they're going to hang either one or two belts above the ring, and the person who climbs the ladder and grabs one or two belts is going to be the TNT champion afterwards. So to me, it doesn't really matter, you know, whether they hang one or two up. There's going to be one TNT champion afterwards. So that, in this sense, this will be cleaned up. But yeah, it was if the TNT TNT specials weren't called Battle of the Belts, but they were called Battle of the Sports Entertainers, I don't know. They wouldn't have done it. They would have just had a non-title match, and you know, they would have just had Cody against Sammy against Dustin or something else. But they needed. I think Tony felt, I got to have a belt on the line because it's Battle of the Belts. It's our first show, and so now we have this silly, clunky, clumsy, needless interim championship. And you're right, Cody was not gone long enough to justify it. Cody didn't talk about why he wasn't medically cleared. Like, he didn't, and not that it's sort of why bother at this point. But anyway, Eric, any thoughts on the interim thing?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it. They were backed into a corner because, as you said, for the Battle of the Belts. The only issue I have, Sammy and Cody, they're just doing the match that got postponed, so that's fine. They were going to do the rematch. Now they're doing the rematch. They added the ladder stipulation to it, probably to make Beach Break in the sunny shores of Cuyahoga River in Cleveland, feel special. They added that ladder stip, which would be fine, but again, they've already got a lights out, no DQ match between Orange Cassidy and Adam Cole, baby. So I feel like one gimmick match per show is good enough. Why does the match need this extra spice of a ladder?
All right, Jay, any closing words from you?
Sure. Really quickly, gosh, I just lost it. Moxley. Moxley's return. I was glad to see him back. Happy for him. This gets to, you know, I hate to keep bringing up WWE. I said they do it too much, right? But WWE is seemingly overly scripted at times. AEW, I think they give the guys too much freedom sometimes. His promo was fine. I have no problems with his promo. But when he came out, and I guess this is just John Moxley, the real-life human being fired up, but his demeanor, to me, I was like, wait, is he a heel? Like, is he going to come out and, I don't know, like, start going off on Adam Page or something? Like, when he threw the water bottle, it didn't come across to me. It's like, oh, I'm just so fired up. It came across as like, I want to knock somebody out with this thing. Like, and the way he was, like, you know, slamming and, like, throwing the guardrails out of the way, I'm like, what is this? He's going to hurt somebody in the crowd. I don't know if me bringing up things being scripted even matters here. Maybe it was just no one knew he was going to do that. Maybe it's just him, the person being fired up. But it didn't match at all his face character, if that makes sense to me. Was I the only one who thought he was just a bit too wild and reckless in his entrance? And if I was in the crowd, I'd be like, whoa, this guy's about to hurt someone. Like, I'm like, are you happy to be back or are you angry? Like,
I think people know that's Moxley's way of showing excitement and happiness. Eric, the water bottle thing, I was kind of like, ooh, I don't know about that, because it was kind of a fastball down the middle. If you weren't paying attention, you know, you could get an eye injury or something. But, yeah, Eric, any thoughts on the Moxley demeanor?
He was so intense and didn't really tip his hand that I wasn't entirely sure if he was a face or a heel coming out of the promo. Right. I assumed he had to be a face because no one's going to boo him at this point, since, you know, he's making a courageous stand for his sobriety and, you know, has a baby at home. So, but you didn't really know because of the intensity, you know, which way the wind was blowing, was because he was all cranky before he left, and he clearly was supposed to be the guy in the Bryan Danielson role against Hangman coming out of the last pay-per-view Full Gear. And so he was, at the time when we last saw John Moxley, he was cranky because his baby daughter wasn't letting him sleep. And every new parent who's had a baby in the house knows exactly what the kind of craziness that can bring to your sanity. So I will say Moxley's promo was so intense that when Excalibur and Tony Schiavone had to run down the show, Schiavone slipped and called Cody. He said the natural nightmare, Cody Rhodes, which I know that was their tag team name, but also it might have been Tony Khan's nickname for Cody at this point, the natural nightmare.
Jake, good to hear from you. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Wade. Have a good evening.
Yep, good topic there. All right, we'll go to Deke in Michigan as promised. Deke, welcome. What'd you think of Dynamite tonight?
Hey, guys. Man, I'll tell you this first. Great show tonight, man. The callers have been awesome. Great points by everybody. I'm right on line with you guys on tonight's show, too. I do have some thoughts on Cody, but a couple other ones. First of all, maybe this is a sign, but nobody's talked about Punk yet tonight. I know you guys briefly said something about it, but, man, that kind of maybe tells me where this angle is at right now. I after last week's debacle, I think most people didn't think that was very good. I wonder if you guys think, did he squash Spears because so many people were like, wow, you guys made Punk look really bad here? You think they did it that quick, thinking that would, okay, that'll immediately get his heat back. Everybody will forget it. All will be forgiven. But it's like, you know, let's say you job to Earthquake, and then the next week you job out Barry Horowitz. Like, well, congratulations, but you still, you know, you still got murdered last week, you know? Like, it didn't make me forget that just because you beat, like, some bum. So I don't know. It didn't erase it. Do you think that's why they did that? Do you think? I mean, I know he was going to win the match anyway, but that quick, that whole segment was just more blah to me. Going back to what I said a few weeks ago, I wasn't big on this angle from the get-go because I think they emptied their clip that very first night. Now they're just kind of plodding along here. I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, Eric, so what do you think of Punk last week taking that beating and then this week on the other end of it winning just in, you know, what, 7 seconds with the quick GTS against Sean Spears? I mean, that's sort of Spears' character, you know? I mean, cocky, charge, loses. He'll just talk his way and annoy his way back into, you know, he'll recover from this and be right where he was and has been all along. But did it help Punk, if and was there damage that needed to be repaired after last week?
My notes on this one say, well, Punk certainly didn't go 50-50 this week. I know that was – I think you might have in your preview on the Focus on AEW might have said, I don't want to see Punk going 50-50 with Spears, or maybe it was Rich Van on everything. Yeah, so you could look at it from a certain point that this was the bookend of last week, right, the flip side. And they were telling a story of he could not handle Wardlow, but he handled Spears very quickly despite the beatdown he got on him from Wardlow. I didn't like a lot of last week's show. I especially did not like Punk taking all those power bombs. I didn't quite understand the psychology behind it because Wardlow was headed for a face turn. And he was doing a very heelish thing. And I get that it was because MJF made him do it. I was trying to explain it in my head. I'm like, well, maybe it's Punk trying to do Wardlow a solid and put him over, right? Because he just got no offense. It was a squash match with CM Punk, who's presumably going to be challenging for the world title, you know, maybe as soon as May. To Deke's point, yeah, we've got 6 more Dynamites until Revolution, and they certainly seem to be stretching this feud out. And the first time MJF and Punk are going to touch is going to be at Revolution. And I was there the night before Thanksgiving for that epic Punk-MJF insult fest. And Thanksgiving feels like it was a year ago at this point. I mean, this thing is just going on week after week on TV, and I don't know how you stretch it out 6 more weeks. You've run through all of the stablemates, right? Where do they go from here?
Yeah, I mean, good point. Do they wait that long? What do you think of MJF tonight, Eric, in terms of the birthday apology followed by a reprimand of Wardlow and how Wardlow reacted, and then MJF joining the announcers on commentary and having zero time to say anything other than, you know, then standing up and having the stare down with Punk?
I'll be honest, I was completely focused on Wardlow's facial reactions, which were great.
Yes.
He just completely pulled focus, which was, I think was the point of that segment. I mean, MJF did his heelish heel routine, right? And he giveth and then he taketh away. And, you know, it was great, exactly what it needed to be to, you know, this thing has, it's a dual track storyline because they're setting up, they've been setting up for forever, MJF and Punk, but they're also setting up MJF and Wardlow. And I assume how this ends, if they can make this last until the March 6th pay-per-view, that, you know, MJF has talked about how he's never been pinned clean, that there's always been, in AEW, there's always been extenuating circumstances. And so it is possible that, you know, Wardlow turns on him and turns face then, allowing Punk to get the win and, you know, MJF getting protected and being able to keep saying, I haven't lost clean yet in an AEW ring. And then they go right away to Wardlow and MJF, but man, it's a lot of time.
Yeah. Deke, one more item from you, cause I do want to have time for everyone who's held as long as you have. But if you have anything else you want to add then before we move on, go ahead.
Yeah. It's just funny you said how many more stablemates are left here. Well, yeah, that's funny too. I mean, how many times they've done that angle now twice with MJF here in the last 6 months or so, and I think they've done it about 3 times in AEW now where, oh, you have to go through the stablemates to fight me. Punk just say no. Like, I mean, why is he under contract to have to fight those other guys? I don't know. They've done that angle a couple times now. Oh, quick on, I guess I'll just hit on Cody. Nobody's mentioned, I guess, that during the commercial break, he's dragging this ladder in the ring. And you're like, okay, well, they're going to have a ladder match. But then he doesn't even mention that at all until the last 5 seconds. And it's like, oh, wait, yeah, I have this 20-foot ladder behind me. Oh, silly me. Yeah, let's fight next week, I guess. But, yeah, just the whole why on earth, what was the point of that? You drag this ladder in, then you don't mention it for 10 minutes. You go talk about a promo that CM Punk cut 10 and a half years ago. Like, what are you doing? And I think the on-site caller was really good, where he talked about guys in the crowd not knowing, okay, are we supposed to cheer now? Oh, this is when we're supposed to cheer. I think there were numerous times like that throughout this show, and I think through a lot of AEW shows. But I'll tell you, he did get the crowd on his side, but this is why I think he got the crowd on his side, because I think they all thought he turned heel when he said, I'm the one that broke down. Yeah, I think the crowd thought, because he stops, he turns to the hard cam, he gets an evil look on his face, and he says, I'm the one that did it. So I think they thought that. And then they kind of, he lost them a little bit, but then throughout he kept getting pops, because guess what? He kept ripping on WWE the entire time. So, of course, they're going to cheer for that stuff. But yet the whole thing was just a jumbled mess. He, like you keep mentioning, he was meta. He kept going in and out of kayfabe. And he does that all the time, but I think this might have been the worst one he has done. You know, and I tell you, I'm a guy that thought he has been going heel, and this whole thing is a heel build the whole time. And I thought he did too when he turned. I'm like, okay, all right, he's finally heel. Then he goes, but I'm not going to turn heel. I'm like, oh, that's it. I mean, I don't care what you say the rest of the time. You just lost me because you used the words, I will not turn heel. Like, I don't know. Like you said, man, it just took me out. And I'm like, this is just dumb, man. I mean, it's just, oh, yeah, and the ladder's behind me. See you next week. Whatever, man. They got to rein that dude in. They have to. But again, he's the guy who said he doesn't believe in heels and faces. So maybe he's doing this on purpose just to prove his point. I don't know.
People who say they don't believe in heels and faces are not getting the crowd response they want. Or they don't understand the business. One or the other. And Cody understands the business. So, I don't. This whole thing of I don't believe in heels and faces, it's just eye-rolling to me. But, Deke, thank you. Fun take on Cody there. Appreciate it.
Hey, I think astute observation. Everybody.
Thanks.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Eric, if you are Tony Khan right now, do you just like sit down and tell Cody, all right, we're not going to script you, but we need to kind of talk about reining in the scope and focus of your promos? Or because we're talking so much about him and Cody still draws ratings, and that's what Tony always says, is Tony going, whatever, we're not, you know, we've got different rules and different segments can have different vibes to them, and Cody can do his thing.
Cody has valued Tony Khan in that he's got the reality show and he's got the Go Big show, and so that makes him valuable to Tony Khan, and that he's providing his business partners a couple more hours of some seasons of content there that get decent ratings, I think, or, you know, good enough ratings. And so does that make Cody untouchable? Is it a matter of, I just need this guy to sign his damn contract and then I can have that talk with him? I don't know Tony Khan personally, so I don't know if is Tony a non-confrontational person? And so he can't have the conversation he needs to have. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't either. It's an interesting test. All right, we'll go to Bryant in Boston and then Ryan in Cumberland on deck. Bryant, we're going to keep it short for the rest of the callers because we're approaching 2 hours here. So thank you for calling. Thank you for holding. Sorry for trying to limit you, but I'm going to apply that to our last couple calls here.
Sure, no problem. I got to admit, I didn't like the show nearly as much as I did the one last week. Last week they gave it a 9.5. This week I probably give it a 6 to a 7. Because they tried to do like Eric was saying, 13 segments. They tried to put too much stuff in. And, you know, at this point, the roster is just oversized, and I think they got to, quote-unquote, trim some of the fat. And, you know, I don't need to see Trent Beretta or Rocky Romero cutting a segment on TV, even if it was brief. That wasn't necessary. And this will be my last point, because I know you guys are trying to keep it short. I like the Britt Baker, you know, Adam Cole match, but I think with these matches, and especially and also with the main event with the chair spot and the tables, I'm pushing the envelope too much. I mean, you know, just put on solid wrestling matches. That's all you need to do. Not every match has to have a dude or a woman going through a table, you know, or, you know, Darby Allin getting almost crucified with a chair on the turnbuckle. They're just taking too many shortcuts and doing, I guess, stupid shit pardon my language, but, you know, when regular wrestling will do just fine. I just think, and I don't want to see a lights out match between Adam Cole and Orange Cassidy. Like, Cole's fine, but Cassidy, come on. If you're going to do a lights out match, and they do these street fights way too often because it takes away the value of things. Like, a lights out match should be like a blow off match once and for all. And in this case it is, but the one lights out match like they really had was Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa. And that definitely was good for it. But Orange Cassidy, and you don't waste a lights out match on Orange Cassidy. I'm sorry. I don't care how popular the guy is. He's quite frankly,
let me
a waste of time.
Let me jump in, Brian, because, I think, first of all, on principle, I agree with you. You know, there's too many table spots, too many chair shots, too many gimmick matches. They turn the lights off and on too much, all that. That said, the table spot, and I know you don't even want to see the Orange Cassidy, Adam Cole, you know, lights out follow-up, but at least it served a purpose. You know, the idea was you knocked my girlfriend off the ring apron, and she went through a table, and she was hurt. So there was a purpose to it beyond trying to earn a This Is Awesome chant or, you know, get a crowd pop. And what was the other example you gave? Darby. And that's just Darby being Darby, you know, and so – you know, and that's just sort of Darby's shtick, is he does something just crazy. And his body
But at some point, if you're Tony Khan, you got to step in and rein in some of this stuff, because the way, you know, the Lucha Brothers go and the way Darby Allin goes, they're likely to get themselves badly injured or even killed.
Yeah, like he's been falling off his skateboard his whole life, and he's a...
If you're Tony Khan,
you
got to put your foot down.
That's the thing, Yes. And I think with Darby, the idea of, well, he's been falling off a skateboard his whole life. He's basically a trained stuntman at this point, and you sort of trust that he knows what his body can do. But then on the other side, you're playing with fire on, you know, sometimes literally, on live television. And, you know, at some point, Eric, Tony being probably non-confrontational, letting people do their own thing, could backfire. So in general, yes, pick your spots. Don't turn the lights off and on as much. Don't have as many spots at the tables. Don't a lights out match means this grudge is so out of hand that we won't sanction it, but we're going to let you fans watch it. But we're going to, like, it's unsanctioned. There's no governing body. It's not going to be on the record books. Their first lights out match, they explained that. It won't even count in the record. And this doesn't feel like it's at that level just because Cassidy bumped into a wrestler in Britt Baker who then fell through a table in a spot that didn't look that bad, actually. Eric, your thoughts on Brian's point?
I have a question about one of Brian's points. So, Wade, you read the ratings every week, and sometimes you see the minute by minute. Does Orange still draw ratings? Because he's been on TV. He gets almost guaranteed a spot every week. Is he still doing well in that?
I don't ask for the minute by minutes from my source all the time, and I haven't studied Orange, so I just don't know the answer to that. I mean, my guess would be he does well because Tony features people who do well, and I think Orange is like super talented, and I think his gimmick is in a zone that I can work with. I know there's some wrestlers I talk to who don't like his you know, his gimmick, you know, that they don't, they think it's, you know, it's outside the bounds of credibility, and it's embarrassing. But, you know, Orange can articulate and explain in the AEW context why he does what he does when he does it, and why it's okay. And I think there's thought put into it. You know, the slow kicks to Britt, you know, to me that's fine. That works. And I think I do think he's like really good. I mean, I think he's getting pushed at a level that I think is justified for him. I'm not in the camp of get him off my TV screen. That said, I am against a lights out stipulation being thrown in for a Cole Orange Cassidy match. It just feels like they're, you know, trying a little too hard.
And then the other question, the psychology of how they set up that no DQ match seemed off to me, backward. Backward may not be the right term, and I'm hoping maybe you could explain it. So Orange is the baby face. He runs into the heel's girlfriend. Normally in a situation,
and so
normally in a situation like that, the baby face is pissed off because his valet or his manager or whatever gets hit, his girlfriend gets hit, and he wants revenge on the heel, whether or not the heel did it on purpose, right? And in this case, it's the opposite of that. It's the heel wants revenge on the baby face for something that was completely an accident and really was Adam Cole's fault for ducking out of the way. That's why Orange ran into Britt. And then the other part, maybe it's because Cole seems to be over as a baby face, as does Britt. But Orange is not a heel. So I'm having a hard time wrapping my brain around the psychology, and I'm hoping you could explain it.
I just think it's Adam Cole's overreacting and casting blame intent on Cassidy that obviously wasn't there. And so the idea is Cole's the bad guy because he's overreacting. But, I mean, the psychology is messy because Cole is defending his girlfriend. And, you know, you don't expect people to be necessarily fully rational and level-headed when they see, you know, a loved one getting hurt. So I don't think it's a great storyline, but I think the idea is, oh, yeah, Cole's overreacting, settle down.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, Brian, back to you. Anything you want to add? And, again, kind of keep it short because we got to wrap up here quick. Or my producer will kill me. Yeah.
I really like the Serena Deeb segment. She's really shaping up to be a pretty major player. I just hope that at some point they put a title on her, like maybe the TNT. I mean, no, not TNT, TBS title or something, because she
really
deserves a run with the belt. So I'll leave off with that. And you guys have a good night.
Thanks, Brian. Yep, call again and we'll take you sooner next time. So you have more time. Yeah, Deeb's great. She's a heel right now, but she might, you know, end up getting cheered as a badass, Eric, as brought up earlier, and, you know, could be somebody to take down Jade Cargill, and the fans might be into that, but, or else, you know, but yeah, I would like to see her in the record books, not in a gold watch way, but because I think she deserves it as a champion at some point with one of the two belts.
Yeah, I didn't think the match needed to be on tonight's show. I know if they did put it on there, they wouldn't have had any women's matches other than the mixed tag that opened the show. But I guess it furthers her character. I don't know who she's challenging or where it's going because there are two heels who hold the two women's titles, and so they're not building up for a title shot. I mean, are they building her up to? Well, I was going to say to pump up Thunder Rosa to have her beat Thunder Rosa beat her on the way to challenging Britt, but I think Mercedes Martinez and Thunder Rosa are next. So I'm not even sure. I guess they needed to have a women's match, and that was the one they chose.
I don't think there's any rush for her. I mean, she can be champion in, you know, February of 2023. I just mean playing long ball with her, you know, position her and protect her and build her up to the point where, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing her have a featured pay-per-view title defense or defend the title a few times at some point. All right, we'll go to Ryan in Cumberland next, and then we'll finish up with Nick in Brattleboro. Go to Ryan. What'd you think of Dynamite tonight?
It was a pretty good show. My question on this ladder match between Sammy and Cody, is this the first time we've had a one-on-one ladder match between a babyface against babyface? Because Shawn Michaels says it's pretty hard to tell a story, you know, unless you have like a really good like angle for these ladder matches.
I think they'll just have a ladder match. Like it'll be a you know, stunt fest, and they'll both play their character. Eric?
Necessary either.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like a major pay-per-view blow off it. I'm not too worried about that. I think they will get their spots in. I mean, it's possible there'll be some psychology with Cody, you know, where he's trying to accomplish something, and it may or may not be meta. But I am curious to see how much time they're given, and especially what Cody does. Does Cody try to win over the fans by, you know, sacrificing himself physically, or does he just try to have a great match? And he puts Sammy over to try to take some of the heat off of him for, you know, taking the belt off of Sammy. I don't know. You know, I mean, it's hard to guess with Cody, but yeah, I'm not too worried about them being able to tell the story.
Yeah, my guess is that Cody retains because he needs that belt to do the tweener character to rationalize why sometimes
right.
he gets booed
Good
and sometimes
point.
He gets cheered. Ryan, what do you think is going to happen? What's the finish of that match?
I think Teddy's going to win, but my main point was, is this like a historic match, and that's a babyface against babyface ladder match, because I don't think that's ever really been done in history. I know we've had Money in the Bank ladder matches where there's been and they face against each other, but that wasn't a one-on-one matchup.
Right, yeah. What else have you got for us, Ryan, real quick?
Okay, my other question was on Jon Moxley. Do you think they're going to move him to like a later time slot now because of his issues with his language, like dropping F-bombs? Because I heard, like, you know, when you do that at 8 o'clock, you know, that's more of an issue because the kids are still awake and watching TV. But like at 9:30, you know, that may not be the case.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate the topic. Eric, I would swears and it gets picked up by the mic, you know, the announcer, oh, we apologize for those watching at home with your families. And they didn't do that. It'd suck if for Moxley, if all of a sudden he gets like reprimanded and the network's mad and it just like throws it all off. I guess that would help his character in a way if word got out about that. But I just don't see it being an ongoing problem that they have to worry about. I mean, this was a very, very emotionally charged moment, and it's a special circumstance they don't have to worry about again.
Yeah. Well, who's supposed to be hitting the bleep button on stuff like that? Is it TBS? Is it somebody at Dynamite?
Okay. They might be on a, yeah, they might be on a 7-second delay again if they aren't. And if someone was supposed to be on that button, they might be the one in trouble as much as Moxley.
Yep.
All right. We'll go to Nick here to wrap up. Nick, thanks for holding so long. You have the honor of being last and also the honor of me telling you, make it quick.
I will make it very quick. Hey, Eric, how you doing? Happy New Year.
Hey.
Just wanted to actually non-wrestling if he's still listening, shout out to Craig. If you're having a tough time, brother, I know I'll probably never talk to you, but know you've got a lot of well-wishers out here in PW Torchland, and reach out to your support system and get the help you need. You've got a lot of courage for stating what you state, and at least from this guy here in Vermont, more power to you, and know you got all my support. So I felt the need to say that. As for wrestling, everyone's pretty much covered, touched base on everything. I thought Deeb was great, and it's potentially, if they're ultimately going to turn Britt face in September, then potentially Deeb could be a person for her to go up against at that point. And with that, I'll let you go and wrap things up.
Thank you, Nick. Appreciate it. Eric, anything you want to say to that?
I have three things in my copious notes that I'll be real quick on. One was the Anna Jay Jade segment featured John Silver and Smart Mark Sterling, and the men did most of the talking. I'm pretty sure that fails the Bechdel test or some corollary of it. Is a Jericho heel turn coming? We didn't talk about that. He was healing on Eddie Kingston, and Santana and Ortiz gave him the business. Those guys are criminally underused, so I'd love to see them in a more high-profile role. And then the final, I'll end with this, and on a high note, AEW had a real low barometer for success tonight. All they had to do was not rename a wrestler for a Nazi World War II military person.
Wow.
Or give a give a woman wrestler a Japanese schoolgirl gimmick, stereotypical. And they passed both of those tests, gosh darn it.
All right, I will end with just a couple quick and short emails here. One references what you just brought up. In it, JB from Detroit, I referenced it at the top of the show. He goes, I'm not sure I understood what Cody's promo was about at all. Within that single promo, he used four techniques to get himself cheered, I think. One, reference the Walter name change from NXT. Two, reference Brody Lee and minus one, negative one. Three, references the contract controversy that he created. Four, challenge Sammy Guevara to yet another gimmick match in a ladder match. Cody is right, and they were on a crazy ride with him. I'm just not sure it really made much sense. Cody is outwitting himself. Also, who do you see winning next week, Cody or Sammy? I genuinely have no idea. We already talked about that. Love the show and go VIP. So also on the subject, Cody, James in Clemson said, I think he may have won this battle, but was it enough to turn the tide of the war? If what I'm reading that guy said to Moxley is what he actually said, that POS is lucky the crowd didn't kick his ass. And I just want to say I really appreciate this Sting run. I never knew Sting in the 90s, but his latest run has shown me what I missed. I'm grateful he had this run in him and that Tony Khan was able to give it to the fans. Eric, are you still cringing at all with Sting, or you're okay with it?
I don't know if Darby was legitimately injured or if that was part of the storyline of why Sting had to go it alone.
Yeah.
But I was really worried when Sting jumped off the table and then they missed the first camera angle and had to show a replay because they missed it.
Frank Leathers anymore.
Yeah, I don't want to see Sting doing that kind of stuff. I just don't.
All right, yeah, I don't know the answer to your – by the way, you brought up Jericho. I don't know if he's turning heel or Santana Ortiz and Eddie Kingston are just going to sort of link up and Jericho's going to be sad and they'll have a – there's no faces or heels. And I don't know. I wasn't quite sure what to make of that. But I didn't come away thinking that's a Jericho heel turn, but at the same time, it might be the only thing that makes sense. So I guess I'm, you know, intrigued, but it's sort of to be determined. I need more hints, but – the whole Jericho Eddie thing. I mean, I feel like the show had as you counted, Eric, so many segments. I feel we could do another hour because I think some things we didn't delve into that we could have and spent some time on. But such is life when there's a show this densely packed. But the Jericho thing, I'm still not sure. It's the end of Inner Circle though.
Do you want to record another hour and talk about Roppongi Vice and the Young Bucks? No, me either. Me neither. You cut out.
Am I up? There, Matt.
Hello?
Eric? Oh. Hello? Can you hear me?
I can now, yeah.
I'm getting a poor connection warning, so maybe it's been me. Do you think it was cool seeing the Japan footage there?
Yeah, well, I did. I was just making a joke. That was
I know.
I mean, it was a real callback there.
I
guess the Bucks need something to do, so they're blowing off the feud with Best Friends, or that's part of the blowing off of the feud with Best Friends.
I am kind of looking forward to the day when AEW just everything is canon in AEW, and they're not pulling from stuff that happened 5 years ago that, you know, social media, internet, podcasts were all like Google Gaga about. Or that felt like the cool thing. And like, I'm kind of craving AEW just being AEW canon. Cause I crave it cause I think it's a better wrestling show than, hey, look, we're acknowledging something you thought would never be acknowledged on TBS, on national TV in the United States before. And it's like, there was a lot of that early on and it was kind of their brand, but now it's like, you got to chase that second million fans and having Beretta and Romero talk about that stuff. I just don't think I just generally don't think it helps AEW in any way. Any fan that cares about that, they've already got them. And it's not that big of a deal. And it just feels like, oh, you know, wouldn't this be cool because it happened before and now we'll bring it here. And I just don't know if that's the best use of TV time at this point.
I mean, I just took it as they're trying to lay backstory and provide a reason for the match that's going to take place Friday. But
my point is have matches that have a reason to exist in your universe, not something that happened pre-AEW on another continent that a sliver of the fan base that you're trying to hold on to and grow with care about. Like, I mean, just people aren't going to care about Trent Barretta and Rocky Romero teaming. There's nothing in AEW Canada that makes that relevant or interesting.
No. Tony Khan is very stingy with his high-profile matches. He is just not giving those away on TV these days. He's saving them all for pay-per-view. So
if you do Romero and Barretta, then give us a story. Like, tell a story. Don't just go, wouldn't it be cool if we redid this? The band got back together again? I mean, it's not that big of a deal. I want them to not rely on a tiny slice of the audience they're trying to attract with stuff like this. Just tell your own stories.
Super served.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Eric, thanks a lot.
Thank
you. It's been fun. Yep. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our emailers. And we'll talk to you next time.